Tavatsa Rudranucharaya Mahamako. Nana Yudhaya Vamanakaya Udhayudhaya. Pingai Pisangaya Makarodarananai. Hayadravadbir Viduranuvarudyata. My dear Vidura, all the followers of Lord Shiva surrounded the arena of sacrifice. They were of short stature and were equipped with various kinds of weapons. Their bodies appeared to be like those of sharks, blackish and yellowish. They ran all around the sacrificial arena and thus began to create disturbances. Kechid Papanju Pravamsam Patni Shalam Tatapare Sada Agnidra Shalam Cha Tadviharam Mahanasham. Some of the soldiers pulled down the pillars which were supporting the pandal of sacrifice. Some of them entered the female quarters. Some began destroying the sacrificial arena, and some entered the kitchen and the residential quarters. They broke all the pots made for use in the sacrifice, and some of them began to extinguish the sacrificial fire. Some tore down the boundary line of the sacrificial arena, and some passed urine on the arena. Some blocked the way of the fleeing sages. Some threatened the women assembled there, and some arrested the demigods who were fleeing the pandal. Maniman, one of the followers of Lord Shiva, arrested Bhrigumuni and Birbhadra, the black demon, arrested Prajapati Daksha. Another follower, who was named Chandesh, arrested Pusha. Nandishwar arrested the demigod Bhaga. There was a continuous shower of stones, and all the priests and other members assembled at the sacrifice were put into immense misery. For fear of their lives, they dispersed in different directions. Birbhadra tore off the mustache of Bhrigu, who was offering the sacrificial oblations with his hands in the fire. Birbhadra immediately caught Bhaga, who had been moving his eyebrows during Bhrigu's cursing of Lord Shiva, and out of great anger, thrust him to the ground and forcibly put out his eyes. Pushno hyapatayad dantan kalingasya yatha balaha sapyamani garimani yohasadrishayandata. Just as Baladev knocked out the teeth of Dantavakra, the king of Kalinga, during the gambling match at the marriage ceremony of Aniruddha, Birbhadra knocked out the teeth of both Daksha, who had shown them while cursing Lord Shiva, and Pusha, who by smiling sympathetically had also shown his teeth. Purport by His Divine Grace, purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Here a reference is made to the marriage of Aniruddha, a grandson of Lord Krishna's. He kidnapped the daughter of Dantavakra, and thereafter he was arrested. Just as he was to be punished for the kidnapping, The soldiers from Dwarka arrived, headed by Balaram, and a fight ensued amongst the Kshatriyas. This sort of fight was very common, especially during marriage ceremonies, when everyone was in a challenging spirit. In that challenging spirit, a fight was sure to occur, and in such fight, there was commonly killing and misfortune. After finishing such fighting, the parties would come to a compromise, and everything would be settled. This Daksha Yajna was similar to such events. Now all of them, Daksha and the demigods, Bhaga and Pusha and Bhrigumuni, were punished by the soldiers of Lord Shiva. But later everything would come to a peaceful end. So this spirit of fighting between one another was not exactly inimical, because everyone was so powerful and wanted to show his strength by Vedic mantra or mystic power. All these fighting skills were very elaborately exhibited by the different parties at the Daksha Yajna. Hare Krishna. We're reading from Canto 4, Chapter 5 of Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled Frustration of the Sacrifice of Daksha. We find here Daksha's performing a yajna to create auspiciousness, to fulfill his mission, which was for the enjoyment of this world and simultaneously the service of the Lord. He is Karma Mishra. Daksha is a very exalted personality, deputed by the Supreme Personality of Godhead through Lord Brahma to procreate various species of life within our universe. So therefore he's serving the Lord, but he simultaneously has his own egoistic desires to be fulfilled simultaneously. Anyways, previously, when Daksha was being welcomed with great honor by so many sages, rishis, pundits, demigods, Shiva, who was sitting in a state of samadhi, meditating on the lotus feet of the Lord, did not bother to stand. Daksha insulted him with so much envious propaganda. Nothing true, but the nature of envy is you take a quality that's actually perhaps neutral or something very wonderful, and with your own mind you interpret it and reinterpret it to be something very dreadful. This is how in this world there's so much confusion as to what is truth and what is not. If people take something that's true and then use that as the basic foundation to manufacture their own lies, then common people who are not so well informed, they see something that seems right, so therefore perhaps the rest of it must be right. In this way, even within Vaishnav society, There has been so much blasphemy over the years, and common people don't really know whether it's true or not. Maybe it is, because the basis of what he's saying is true, so maybe the rest is true. So the basis of what he's saying about Lord Shiva is true. He does wear skulls, and he does have ashes of crematoriums, and he doesn't comb his hair properly, and he is surrounded by all kinds of ghostly beings. But not explaining that this is actually Lord Shiva's service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It's the expression of his unlimited compassion to the most fallen souls. He's utilizing these truths to propagate that Shiva is just a very low-class, ignorant, unqualified fool, dangerous person. So daksha means expert. He was expert not only at discharging semen and having incredible quantities and varieties of children, but he also had a very expert intelligence of twisting the truth into something that wasn't true at all, in such a way that even so many learned Brahmins who happened to be assembled there fell for his propaganda. And they took his side against Lord Shiva. So we have to be very, very careful. Because it is the nature of the wicked, envious mind to take something good out of context and make it horrible. Or to take one little mistake and make it into a whole horrible, horrible situation. Newspapers are very expert at this. And this is the whole ras, or perverted ras, which gives people nectar in the form of gossip. Because if there's no chance that it can be true, it's not interesting. But to believe something that's horrible, that's scandalous, is very gratifying to the ego for people in this age of Kali Yuga. And if we hear such things, then we are doomed if they don't happen to be true. Actually, in the Bhagavatam, sometimes the demons, they blaspheme Krishna. And then the acharyas, they explain how Goddess Saraswati is speaking through them. And they reinterpret their blasphemy to be praise. That's how the acharyas see things. Now, the envious people are the opposite. Something can be good about somebody, but they'll interpret it to be blasphemy. To those who are good, Goddess Saraswati gives the understanding by which they can understand very clearly what is actually meant, the truth about Krishna and his devotees, even if it's in the context of terrible blasphemy. However, for those who are envious, the goddess Saraswati, through her Durga-type energies, she will take the praise of the Lord and give people the intelligence to reinterpret it to be blasphemy. Yeyatamam papadyante tams tadaiva bhajamya. Krishna reveals himself according to how we approach him. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu described the perfection of life as kirtaniya sadahadi, to always be chanting the holy names. So on nationwide television in America, one person who was on a terrible propaganda against our movement was speaking to one of our senior devotees, and he was blaspheming And the basis of his blasphemy is these people are totally brainwashed. They have no minds. They're a dangerous cult. And the proof is they're always chanting Krishna's names. Just look at him. Even now when I'm talking, he's chanting. Hare Krishna. So a saintly person would be watching thinking, this person is wonderful. I want to join this movement. Even in the face of being blasphemed, he's chanting Krishna's names. But this man is interpreting it in a different way. The fact that he's always chanting Krishna's names means he can't think properly. He's a brainwashed, zombie-like creature. And most of the people believe that person. The millions of people are watching television. They were thinking, yes, what this person is saying. If he's always chanting Hare Krishna, that means something dangerous about him. We have to protect our children from such zombies. So due to that, there was a lot of confusion and cursing and counter-cursing. And even Bhrigu Muni, who we read about in Bhagavatam, he's a very great sage, a great devotee. Of course, this is long before he met Krishna, Vishnu, that he was very much caught up in the emotional fervor that was going on there. And he started to participate. This is another dangerous situation, this mob psychology, where we just get caught up with everybody else's emotions and then we become so infected and affected that we speak things that we don't really mean. What to speak of do things that if we were sitting alone contemplating whether it should be done or not done, we would never do. But we're so much victimized by the environment around us. So later on, there is a yajna going on, very social event, and Sati wanted to go. So she told her husband, Shiva, he said, you don't want to go there. Your father is very angry with me, and he will certainly blaspheme me. But she wanted to be with her sisters and her mother and wanted to dress nicely and go to this very distinguished social event. So Shiva said, all right. And he sent some of his guards to protect her. So Daksha, in order to show the public how displeased he was with Lord Shiva, he neglected to show any affection to his own daughter simply because of her relationship with Shiva. As a chaste, loving wife, and as a great devotee of Mahadev, she could not tolerate this blasphemy. Srila Prabhupada explains that Sati is Parvati in her previous incarnation. That means she's the goddess Durga. She's the controller of the entire material nature. She was far more powerful than Daksha. She could have easily annihilated Daksha within a second. However, by social standards, she was the daughter of Daksha. So she was thinking that this is not proper. Although I can destroy this rascal in a second, because he's my father, I should not do that. It's not the role of a daughter to kill the father. Better I kill myself, just to make a statement. How horrible this Vaishnava aparadha is. Because he's blaspheming Shiva, I want nothing to do with him. And because my body has come from his, let me destroy this body. So she put on the saffron dress. Saffron dress really means preparation for death. Hare Krishna. Because renunciation means the ego's dead. That's real renunciation. Die to live. The ego dies. Socially, we're dead to our mundane relationships. And when all of our material conceptions due to false ego die, then we actually live eternally with Krishna. Die to live. This is Bhaktivinoda Thakur's statement about Vaishnavas, that Vaishnavas die to live and live to spread the holy name around. So she meditated on the lotus feet of Lord Shiva, and by her mystic siddhi, she generated the fire element in her body, and her body set on fire. Upon seeing the demise of Sati, her guardians, who were deputed by Lord Shiva, they were terribly angry. So naturally, they attacked. But Bhrigu Muni was in the middle of performing a yajna. So he offered a certain oblation with particular mantras to the southern part of the yajnashala. And he created this army called Ribhus, very powerful, like a demigod army. And they attacked the followers of Shiva and rooted them. And the followers of Lord Shiva were scattered here and there and ran back to where Lord Shiva was. Meanwhile, this whole incident was of relevance enough to attract the attention of Narada Muni. He understood that this is a very, very suitable background to create an interesting pastime of the Lord. So Narada Muni went to Lord Shiva and told him, this is what happened. Daksha neglected his own daughter Sati, your wife, broke her heart into so many pieces she could not any longer live. She gave up her body. And then your loyal soldiers, they went to take revenge and they were defeated by Bhrigu Muni's ribhus. When Lord Shiva heard this from Narada Muni, he burned with anger. When Lord Shiva, who is the Gunavatar, in charge of destruction of the cosmic manifestation of the universe, when he becomes angry, it is something inconceivable. We have seen people of this world get angry and how fearful we become. Anger is such a demoniac situation. So Lord Shiva, he manifested unlimited anger. In his anger, he started to laugh. He pulled a hair from his head, which was shining like lightning. He dashed it to the ground, and from that hair was created an immensely powerful demoniac personality of the name Birabhadra. He had black body, red eyes, carrying a massive trident. He was like death personified. Shiva's own energy, created for a very specific purpose. Birabhadra bowed down to Lord Shiva and said, Master, how may I serve you? Lord Shiva ordered him, kill Daksha. He's an envious person. Birabhadra circumambulated Lord Shiva and proceeded to the yajna, where Lord Shiva's other soldiers were following close behind. So meanwhile, Bhrigu Muni is about to continue the yajna. All of a sudden, because this Birbhadra and all Shiva's companions are proceeding so fast, there was like darkness and dust risen everywhere. Everyone was wondering, what is the cause of this inauspiciousness? And then, to everyone's great surprise, Birbhadra appeared. Actually, although Daksha and the great rishis and Brahmins, they were bewildered. They were trying to figure out, why is there so much dust? Why is it so dark? The cows aren't running around, and the plunderers and thieves, they can't be here because there's a good king. So why is this? According to the weather report, it's not supposed to be like this. But the wife of Daksha, Prashuti, who happened to be the mother of Sati, she knew exactly what was happening. Because she was a very simple, innocent, gentle, soft-hearted woman. Here, Bhrigu Muni, these big, big learned Brahmins, and Daksha, king of the Prajapatis, they couldn't figure out what's happening. Prashuti, simple lady, because of her soft heart, she could see exactly into the truth. Shiva was blasphemed. Sati died an inauspicious death by her calculations. Therefore, this is the reaction. It must be done. So for you hard-hearted men, you should take very seriously the intuition of your soft-hearted wives to understand especially what your own condition may be in life. It may be very helpful. And for you brahmacharis, you should just get soft hearts because... Listen to other soft-hearted brahmacharis. But it's important that we hear from others, because the nature of the false ego is it makes our hearts hard. And in these verses that we're reading today, there is a description of what havoc Virabhadra, Nandishwar, and the other associates of Lord Shiva we're having on this particular assembly. They were just tearing down all the grand, opulent arrangements for the yajna, passing urine in it, tearing down the palatial buildings and palaces. They created terror. And Birbhadra, he wanted to personally avenge everyone just to give them the exact reaction to their offenses that they committed. For Bhrigu Muni, he pulled out his mustache. Hare Krishna. Because from his mouth, mustache is like protecting the mouth, from his mouth came blasphemy of Lord Shiva. So therefore pulled out his mustache. And it describes how Birbhadra then caught Daksha and Pusha, who showed their teeth smiling as they were blaspheming Lord Shiva. And he knocked out their teeth. And it is described, just as Baladev knocked out the teeth of the king of Kalinga. Yad yad acharati stres tas tad tad evet rojana. As great people do, other people follow. So Baladeva is supremely great. He's the topmost servant of Krishna. He's the supreme personality of Godhead. Prabhupada explains the only difference between Krishna and Balaram is one has a blackish complexion like a monsoon cloud and the other has a whitish complexion like a spring cloud. So here Birbhadra is following in the footsteps of Baladev. And what Srila Prabhupada and Sukadeva Goswami are referring to is a story that will later be told in the 10th canto. In order to understand with greater appreciation, we'll briefly explain this story. Krishna's Leela, everything is so intimately and interestingly interrelated. Krishna left Vrindavan to go to Mathura because Kamsa invited him to come for a wrestling match. So Krishna Balaram went and they killed Chanura Mushtika, then they killed Kamsa. Kamsa's two wives were the daughters of Jarasandha. In those days, amongst Kshatriyas, there were very, very interesting marriage arrangements. Sometimes out of passion and love, sometimes out of chivalry, sometimes for very political purposes, or sometimes just for affection. Very fascinating histories within our scriptures of various reasons people were married. So Jarasandha and Kamsa, they were formidable allies against Krishna, against Dharma. So naturally they married to create a deeper bond. Jarasandha gave his beloved daughters to Kamsa to protect. So after Kamsa was killed, they went back and explained that Kamsa was just innocently minding his own business. He's such a nice person. And this Krishna, this terrible rascal, he just came up unexpectedly and killed our husband. So Jarasandha, with 23 Akshohini divisions of soldiers, attacked Mathura 17 times. And Krishna would just keep killing the entire army, capture Jarasandha and let him go. So on one occasion, Muchukunda, he was sleeping in a cave because he helped the demigods very nicely to fight against the Asuras. He fought so hard, he didn't even sleep. So when the battle was won, the demigods offered him any benediction. He just wanted to go to sleep and not be disturbed. We all have this experience. So they gave benediction. Whoever wakes you up, you can burn to ashes with your glance. So meanwhile, there was a Malecha king named Kalyavana, who was created by Gargamuni. It's a wonderful story. And he attacked. So Krishna just started walking away from Kalyavana. And Kalyavana was following him, and Krishna was walking, and he was following, but he couldn't catch up. Krishna walked into the cave. Kalyavana saw this person laying down, sleeping, and he thought, it's Krishna. So he kicked him. What insult! I've come to fight you, and you go to sleep. That's really an insult. That he just was so bored with the idea of fighting such a great person, he just went to sleep. So he kicked him. And Muchukunda woke up, burnt him to ashes by his glance. So Krishna simultaneously woke up Muchukunda, because he's a great Vaishnava. He shouldn't be sleeping. Oversleeping is not good for devotees. In fact, Prabhupada said, if you sleep too much, you fall into the mode of ignorance. And then all other bad qualities come. So he woke up. Simultaneously, Kali Ivana was killed, and Krishna didn't have to kill that Malecho himself. He let Muchukunda do it. And then Muchukunda surrendered to Krishna. But because he was sleeping so long, when he went outside, he noticed that everything had become small. The trees were small, and the people were small. He understood Kali Yuga had come. Meanwhile, Krishna Balaram and their armies destroyed the army of Kali Ivana, and then they went to fight with Jarasandha. So Krishna and Balaram saw Jarasandha insulting him as Kshatriyas would do. When they would fight, they would be completely absorbed. All their senses, all their organs were just in battling against their opponent. And we find so often when two great opposing heroes are about to battle, first they just hurl insults, the most vicious, terrible insults against each other with their mouths, just to prepare their consciousness with enmity. So Jarasandha attacked. He already lost so many times. But Krishna and Balaram just walked by. So he started chasing after them, and they just kept walking, walking, walking. He was chasing with his armies. And Krishna went Prabhadarsana, a big, big mountain. They climbed this mountain. So Jarasandha was thinking, Krishna's a coward. He's Ranchor. He's running away from battle. So he had his army set the entire mountain on fire. Blazing fire. All around. Krishna Balaram jumped from the top of the mountain, and they had already, previous to this, relocated the Yadu dynasty to an island floating on the ocean called Dwaraka. So they just went to Dwaraka. Meanwhile, Jarasandha was thinking, Krishna's dead. Finally, sweet revenge has been fulfilled. So the acharyas explained that Krishna went to Dwaraka because he didn't want to have to go through the whole fight and everything, because he knew that Rukmini had a time deadline when she had to be kidnapped by. So when he arrived in Dwaraka, a Brahmin came with a message from Rukmini. And she explained how, after hearing about Krishna, she surrendered her heart at his lotus feet with pure unalloyed love and devotion. And she could accept no one else as her husband except Krishna. However, even though Rukmini loved Krishna and expressed her desire to others, her father, Maharaj Bhishmaka, who was a very great person, he actually wanted to marry his daughter to Krishna. And all the other relatives were very happy with this proposal that she marry Krishna, except her brother, who was heir to the throne. His name was Rukmi. He hated Krishna. He was envious of Krishna, because his friends were Jarasandha, Dantavakra, previously Kamsa, Shalva, and one of his best friends was this demoniac king who was the king of Kalinga, and one of his dearest associates was Shishupal. Now, Shishupal was madly in love with Rukmini, which was good for him, but not good for Rukmini. It's good for anyone to be in love with Rukmini. But unfortunately, his love was not spiritual. It was based on his egoistic, sensual mentality. So Rukmi decided that my sister will marry Shishupal, not Krishna. And he was so insistent. And nobody in the family wanted to go against Rukmi because he was a very, very influential and powerful man. So ultimately, Maharaj Bhishmaka said, all right, we will marry our daughter to Shishupal. So Shishupal sent this letter to the Brahmin that Shishupal is about to marry me. This jackal is about to take what's meant for a lion. I've given my heart to you. I love only you. I can tell you how it's possible for me to marry you. The day before the actual wedding takes place, it is our family tradition that the coming bride goes to the temple of the goddess Ambika to worship her and seek her blessings. At that time, Krishna, as I'm coming out, that will be the perfect opportunity for you to kidnap me. If you do not, then I will give up my life because I can live with no one else. So the fact was that this day was coming up very soon. So Krishna told the Brahmin, tell Rukmini I'm coming. But the Brahmin was late the night before when she was to go to the temple of Ambika. Even that morning, still there was no message. So she was thinking, due to my previous sins, because of my love is not pure, therefore Krishna is not responding. She was in such separation. In fact, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu at Chandrasekhar Bhavan, in Navadvip, he danced in the role of Goddess of Fortune. And he exhibited the ecstasies of Rukmini's separation from Krishna, as she was not yet receiving any response from him. Lord Chaitanya was literally shedding incessant tears, offering the most beautiful, heartfelt prayers of humility and separation due to her love for Krishna. So the Brahmin came and said, Krishna's coming. He has accepted your proposal. He wants to marry you. He's always thinking of you. So Rukmini understood everything as very nice. So she went into the temple of Ambika. Actually, that night, Krishna and Balaram, with their armies, happened to arrive in the city of Kundina, which was the capital of the kingdom of Vidarbha. So Maharaj Bhishmaka welcomed Krishna and Balaram very nicely and arranged nice residential quarters for them for that night. But when the news came to Rukmi and Jarasandha and Shishupal, they were very much concerned that Krishna is going to try to steal her, definitely. So when Rukmini was coming, when she went into the temple of Ambika, Jarasandha, Shishupal, all those people with their armies, they were gathered all around to protect her from Krishna. And especially Rukmi. He was on red alert. So Rukmini just prayed to Ambika, please have Krishna steal me away from this place. And when she came out, because she was so beautiful, the power of her beauty actually defeated all the soldiers. They were so charmed to see her that these big, great, powerful Kshatriya warriors fell unconscious because they just could not accommodate such immense beauty. She was just a young child. At that moment, when everything was perfectly favorable, Krishna came with his chariot and took Rukmini on chariot and drove away. The Damaniya kings, they were so insulted by this act. They were outraged. They immediately started yelling and screaming and attacked Krishna. But as Krishna was going away, Balaram had his armies, and there was a major war. And ultimately, Balaram and the Yadus, along with Krishna, they totally destroyed the armies. And Jarasandha was helpless. And he started preaching to Shishupal, who was really, really in distress. This was the ultimate insult to Shishupal's ego. Because Shishupal was the competitor against Krishna. On every level of life, Krishna was defeating him. And now he took away the object of his passionate love publicly, right in front of everyone. And there's nothing else he could do about it. So he was just lamenting in total distress. He tried to fight, but he was defeated. So Jarasandha preached to him. He said, actually, this is the will of providence. Sometimes you win, sometimes you lose. Now time is on Krishna's side. But in the future, time will be on your side, and then you will defeat Krishna. And your desires will be fulfilled. So Shishupal, he went home, he lost, and the other armies, they just realized there's nothing we could do. But Rukmi, he was beyond himself in anger. He took a vow that I'm going to leave the city of Kundina, and I'm going to attack Krishna, I'm going to kill Krishna, and I'm going to bring Rukmini back. And if I don't, I will never come back into this city again. So he took a whole military division of armies and went charging after Krishna. He began to insult Krishna, screaming at him, "You low-born cowherd boy, what right do you have taking my sister? She's of great royalty. It's like a crow taking what's meant for the royal sacrifice." So he blasphemed Krishna in so many ways. Again, he's blaspheming Krishna by calling him a cowherd boy. But for devotees, when we think of Krishna as cowherd boy, this is the highest praise of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So there was a great battle. Rukmi began to shoot arrows, and Krishna shot some arrows to destroy his arrows and then break his bow. He got another bow, and Krishna shot that bow and broke it. So many bows were broken. Ultimately, Krishna destroyed his chariot. He started sending maces and javelins, and Krishna just shot some arrows and destroyed them. Then Rukmi was so outraged. He picked up a sword and a shield, and he came charging at Krishna in anger. So Krishna broke the sword and broke the shield, then captured Rukmi, took his sword, was about to kill this demon. But Rukmini loved him because he was a brother. her natural affection. She started to cry. And she begged Krishna that you are the supreme, omnipotent, all-powerful Lord of all lords. Whatever you do is perfect. But please, please do not kill my brother. I love my brother. So Krishna did not want to hurt the heart of his to-be bride, especially since just before their marriage. He wanted her to be happy. So instead of killing Rukmi, he gave him a mystical type of shave where he cut off hairs from his head and his face in such a way that he looked ridiculous. And for a Kshatriya to be dishonored is worse than death. So Rukmi was just devastated by this insult. Meanwhile, Balaram came. And Balaramji was so affectionate, especially to Rukmini. He started to correct Krishna. He said, actually, why have you done this to him? He's your brother-in-law. He's the brother of your wife. And relatives like this should not be punished. They should not be put into painful conditions of life. And then he began to preach to Rukmini to pacify her out of love. So Balaram spoke in so many philosophical ways to explain that actually it's not Krishna but your brother. Although he may be your brother and everything else and you love him, still due to his past misdeeds, these are the karmic reactions that have to come upon him. So we should see that we are not these bodies, we are the eternal souls, and we should be aloof from all of the changes that come upon within our material lives. So Balaram was really speaking in such a way that he was real well-wisher of Rukmini, and he was also, in order to do so, he was protecting Rukmi. So Krishna brought Rukmini back to Dwarka, and they had a wonderful marriage. The people of Dwarka were celebrating profusely. It was a lavish wedding. It was the first marriage of Krishna. First authorized marriage of Krishna. In Vrindavan there is Parakya Ras, but in Dwarka is Swakya Ras. Krishna married 16,108 queens eventually, and from each of them he had 10 children. I believe he had 10 sons and one daughter from each of his queens. So the first, before he even married any other queens, the first child he had was from Rukmini. His name was Prajumana. Just after he was born, a demon of the name Shambhara kidnapped the infant child because he really was envious of Krishna. He took this child and threw it in the ocean. By the inconceivable arrangement of the Lord, a very big fish happened to swallow the baby. Soon after, Sambhara's own kitchen, a fisherman came who had just caught that fish. Knowing that Sambhara likes to eat fish because he's a demon. So the cook cut open the fish. And there was this beautiful little baby still alive. So one of the maidservants of Sambhara's palace was named Mayavati. And in her previous life, she was Rati. And her husband was Kamadev. Now Kamadev, on the command of the demigods, was trying to somehow or other break Lord Shiva out of his samadhi meditation because there was urgent business to be done. And ultimately he shot an arrow at Shiva. And Shiva looked around, who has disturbed my samadhi? And he happened to see in the bushes there was Kamadev with his flower bow, who had just shot a flower arrow. But those arrows are very powerful. There's no need to explain the details to any of you, because I'm sure you have personal experience over millions of births of how powerful these arrows are. So Shiva looked at him and burned him to ashes. He became Ananga, without a body. But that demigod, Cupid, is a partial expansion, 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 expansion of Pradyumna, who happens to be the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself. In the Vaikuntha worlds, Krishna expands himself into Lord Baladev, then Lord Baladev expands quadruply into four forms as Aniruddha, Pradyumna, Vasudev, and Shankarshan. So this quadruple expansion is actually not the Supreme Absolute Truth, the Personality of Godhead, the source of Lord Narayan. So this Pradyumna, who was born of Krishna, was actually the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Pradyumna of Vaikuntha. However, the demigod expansion, Kamadev, after he lost his body, he merged into the body of Pradyumna as a partial expansion of himself, partial aspect of himself. So Mayavati, she was given the news of actually who this Pradyumna really was. In previous life, he was Kamadev, her consort. So she took the baby to be like his mother. Very quickly, he grew up. One day, she was moving her eyebrows in a very conjugal mood of affection. So Pradyumna was very confused by this, that you're my mother. You're acting like my mother. Why are you looking at me like this? And she explained that actually this is the story. I am Rati, you are Kamadev. We are meant to be consorts, like that. So then she explained how he should kill Sambara, and there was a great fight. And Pradyumna killed Sambara in battle, and then Mayavati brought him back to Dwarka. When he came back to Dwarka, he looked just like Krishna, but he wasn't Krishna. So everyone was wondering, who is this personality? Of course, Rukmini never forgot her lost son. So when she saw Pradyumna, she was thinking, if my little baby were alive, he would be right exactly his age, and he would look just like this. So then it was revealed. So there was a great reunion between Krishna, Rukmini, and their beloved son, Pradyumna, firstborn of Krishna. Now, Rukmi, if you remember, the brother of Rukmini, where he was given that insult by Krishna by shaving his hairs from his face, he made a city there because he vowed he would not go to Kundina in Vidarbha. And he kept his vow. He was a Kshatriya. So he couldn't go back to his capital, so he made a city right at the very place where he was insulted. And he called it Bhojaka. The Acharyas explained Bhoja means experience and Jaka means vow. Due to the experience that he had undergone, he made a vow. He would never go back into Kundina. He would get revenge on Krishna. So he happened to have a daughter whose name was Rukmavati. As the Kshatriyas would do, there was a Swayamvara where the bride just sits there and all great heroes, Kshatriyas, come and show their strength and fight and battle to see who gets the bride, and ultimately the bride selects whoever she wants. Or sometimes the person just kidnaps the bride and defeats everyone else. This is how marriage board amongst Kshatriyas of that time. So, Rukmavati, the daughter of Rukmi, is having her Swayamvara, and Pradyumna is thinking, this is the person I want to marry. So he comes in and defeats all the other warriors and kidnaps Rukmavati. So Rukmi is thinking, this is the son of my sister, but also the son of Krishna. But somehow or other, my daughter wants to marry him. Rukmi actually had an affectionate side. He hated Krishna, but he did have an affectionate side to his sister, to his daughter. And ultimately, whatever makes my daughter happy, I will support it. So there was a wonderful marriage ceremony, endorsed, supported, with all blessings of Rukmi. And Pradyumna married Rukmavati. They had a son whose name was Aniruddha, who was also an expansion of the Aniruddha of Vaikuntha. Actually, not expansion. He was the Aniruddha of Vaikuntha. The Aniruddha of Vaikuntha is an expansion of him. So this Aniruddha is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And he decided to marry the granddaughter of Rukmi, whose name was Rochana. This was what Srila Prabhupada and what Shukadeva Goswami are referring to in this purport. Somehow or other, we've gotten back to the verse again. Just as Baladev knocked out the teeth of Dantavakra, the king of Kalinga, during the gambling match at the marriage ceremony of Aniruddha, Virbhadra knocked out the teeth of both Daksha, who had shown them while cursing Lord Shiva, and Pusha, who by smiling sympathetically had also shown his teeth. So somehow or other, Aniruddha won the hand of Rochana, and Rukmi, the grandfather, just to please his granddaughter and to please his sister Rukmini, gave all blessings for the marriage. In fact, he even arranged the whole marriage ceremony in Bhojaka. Hare Krishna. So when all the arrangements were made, Krishna, Balaram, and Rukmini came to attend the marriage of Aniruddha and Rochana. After the marriage, it was a very joyful ceremony. As Srila Prabhupada explains in this purport, the Kshatriyas, they have to somehow or other manifest their Kshatriya spirit in such public events. So the king of Kalinga, he had this idea that we should humiliate Balaram. And he told Rukmi that Balaram cannot refuse a challenge. And he's horrible at playing dice. So we should challenge him to play a gambling match of dice. So they challenged, and of course Balaram accepted. So first there was 100 gold coins. The first round of the dice match went like this. 100 gold coins, Rukmi won. Then 1,000 gold coins, Rukmi won. Then 10,000 gold coins, Rukmi won. Balaram was not happy. So then they challenged Balaram to a second round, which began with 100,000 gold coins. They threw the dice. Balaram won. However, the king of Kalinga, every time Balaram would lose, he was such a rascal person. He would just laugh really loud and show his crooked teeth to Balaram. And Balaram really couldn't tolerate this. But he was trying to be a gentleman. He actually was losing. He actually lost the first round. So the king of Kalinga was just laughing, showing his teeth right into Balaram's face. So the next round, they threw the dice, 100,000 gold coins backed, and Balaram won. But then the king of Kalinga started laughing and showing his teeth and said, no, actually Rukmi has won. And Rukmi started screaming out, yes, you see, I have won. They were cheaters. And Rukmi, everybody around the dice game happened to be Rukmi's associates. So he said, ask everyone. And everyone was saying, yes, Rukmi won. And Balaram, he was just trembling in anger. He was being cheated. So because everyone said he lost, they did another bet. 10 million gold coins. Hare Krishna. They threw the dice, and Balaramji won. Again, the king of Kalinga started laughing and showing his teeth, saying, Rukmi has won. What you are saying is a lie. You have lost. You are a cheater. And Rukmi was saying, yes, I have won. And everyone around was saying, Balaram lost. Rukmi has won. Then a voice came from the sky saying, Rukmi is a cheater. Balaram has won the game of dice. But Rukmi was just ignored the voice and said, this money is mine. I have defeated you. Why are you such a cheater? Why are you lying to me? I have won. And everybody around was saying, I have won. And King of Kalinga was laughing. Rukmi won! Balaram was so disgusted by this. He picked up his club and pounded Rukmi right on the head and killed him. Balaramji ki jai! Then he punched the king of Kalinga right in the mouth and knocked out all his teeth. So there was no more laughing and showing teeth anymore in his life. Immediate, direct, sinful reaction for his aparad. Now it's interesting that Srila Prabhupada in this purport and translation describes that Baladev knocked out the teeth of Dantavakra, the king of Kalinga. The Dantavakra, who happened to be the incarnation of Jai and Vijay, was the king of Kurusha. So obviously this Dantavakra, who is the king of Kalinga, Dantavakra means crooked teeth. Prabhupada's explaining it in this way. Not the same Dantavakra, but certainly he was Dantavakra, because by the time Balaram got through with him, he had very crooked teeth. Sri Baladev Ki Jai. So after knocking out the teeth of Dantavakra and killing Rukmi, all the other people gathered around Balaram just started smashing them all with his club, and they all, their limbs were being crushed and they were bleeding profusely, and they all ran away. Balaram was really angry. And Rukmini, she was very sad because her brother was just killed. Just see the envy of Rukmi. Balaram was the one that saved him before. He was the one that protected him. But still, no gratitude. So the devotees of the Yadus somehow pacified Rukmini, and then they put Aniruddha and Rochana on a nice raised palanquin and brought them back to Dwarka, where they lived very happily. So in this way, Birbhadra, he gave a very appropriate reaction to Daksha and Pusha by knocking out their teeth. Through those teeth came the blasphemies of Shiva. They were smiling as they were blaspheming Shiva. And Prabhupada explains here that this was just the common way that marriages used to take place amongst Kshatriyas. What happened with Aniruddha and Rochana. And in the same way, in this yajna of Daksha, although there was all kinds of violence and emotions, ultimately everything worked out very nicely. Srila Prabhupada explains, because everyone was so powerful and wanted to show his strength by Vedic mantra or mystic power, all these fighting skills were very elaborately exhibited by the different parties at the Daksha Yajna. And Prabhupada explains, but in the end, because ultimately they're all Brahmins and devotees, they all got the reactions of their offenses, they all suffered terribly for the offenses they committed, but then they all got higher realizations. We're going to read in tomorrow's verse. I believe His Holiness Bhakti Charu Maharaj may give class tomorrow, where Birbhadra decided to cut off the head of Daksha for his offenses. But Daksha was such a powerful person that Birbhadra was trying with all his might. He couldn't cut his head off. So ultimately he went to the facility that was meant to cut the head of the sacrificial animal, and he put Daksha in that and used that to cut off his head. Daksha was dead. But then later on, by the arrangement of Lord Brahma, he was given his life back in the head of the goat that was meant to be sacrificed. So here is the most beautiful, effulgent, exalted person, Daksha, with the head of a goat. Horrible situation. Nothing to be proud of anymore. And as soon as his reasons for his false ego and pride were taken away, he became very sober. You see, as long as he was the beautiful, intelligent, powerful, popular, worshipable Daksha, he was infatuated. He couldn't see his own mistakes. He could not see his own downfall. That's the condition of the false ego. Actually, Sati, his own wife, and so many other well-wishers were telling him what he was doing was wrong. He couldn't hear them. When we become infatuated by too much worship, by too much affection and appreciation of others, by too much respect being given to us, that respect becomes such an intoxicating element that our intelligence is lost. We just start believing all these things about ourselves. And we think ourselves so great, we cannot any longer take the proper guidance of others. We can't see the signs that Krishna is showing from within and without that we're about to be destroyed, we're about to fall. We can't see it because we become so insensitivized by our false ego. That was Daksha's condition. But ultimately he was a devotee. He knows the philosophy. He knows what Vaishnava Aparad is. It's the first offense to the holy name. And his own daughter was telling him what was going to happen to him. But he couldn't hear it. He couldn't understand it. Due to the intoxicating degree of his false ego, he felt everything he was saying was justified. Generally, when a people go on a passionate campaign of Vaishnava Aparad, they don't think they're committing Aparad. Somehow or other, their perverted intelligence, captured by the false ego, justifies that it's right. And even if it is an Aparad, there will be no reaction because it's justified. I have to do it. It's necessary. And it's true. He was blind due to his high position. You know, some of us, a few people say, you know, you are very nice. Or they may offer some respect to us. But Daksha's position, when he came in, every demigod except Brahma and Shiva stood up to greet him. The greatest rishis were standing up to praise his glories. Very dangerous. Due to that excessive glorification he was receiving, he became infatuated and intoxicated. And he acted in the most cruel. Even his own daughter gave up her body due to his offenses, and that didn't even move his heart.